That to-do list you have needs one more thing. Chill. It's an easy thing to do. Just crack open an ice-cold Coors Light and chill. Take the afternoon off and binge-watch anything. Go to happy hour and stay for a couple hours. Who's counting anyways? Or hang out with just your dog because you've had enough human interaction this week. Whatever you do, do it with a Coors Light. Mountain Cold Refreshment made to chill. 2020 Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Celebrate responsibly.
Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Fair or not, the perception of our market as a sports market for the last 5, 6, maybe even 10 years has been that the Pacific Northwest and specifically Portland, Oregon, not a great sports market. That's outside in. I know you're passionate. You know I'm passionate. You know we have lots to talk about, lots to focus on, lots to get excited about. Hell, I know that there's going to be a line outside Moda Center later this afternoon and tomorrow and all through the weekend and all the way to Monday. A line of college basketball fans, they're going to line up, go inside Moda Center, and watch the Portland Regional. I couldn't help but notice that several national media members took shots at Portland, lumped us together with Albany, New York, and said, why in the world would women's college basketball, why would the NCAA put these two regionals in two subpar cities? Not my words. It's their words. I mixed it up a little bit off the grid with some of those media members. I reached out directly because I didn't want to tweet at them. I didn't want to get in a big back and forth. And I basically just said, hey, what do you have against Portland? I get it. I've knocked leadership in the city of Portland. I have criticized the can't-do attitude that you sometimes see at our state capitol. I have looked at the Trailblazers specifically and said, there's nothing to see here. But I'll tell you, like, you know, Portland as a regional site for women's college basketball makes all the sense in the world to me. Albany, I get it as well. The NCAA saying, look, we don't want to have four regional sites. We only want to have two sites in the women's bracket. Part of that is they want to drive attendance, and they know by having eight teams in one location instead of four, like the men's tournament does. So your Elite Eight, your Sweet 16 rounds, Portland and Albany, New York, eight teams each over 4 days, that will get down to two. And those two will be on one side of the Final Four bracket, and the two other schools from the other regional will be on the other side of the bracket. That's how it works. It's designed to drive more fans into fan-friendly cities that are going to embrace women's basketball. The men's Final Four, you're going to see it held inside a football stadium. The women's Final Four will be in Cleveland. And we all know in 2030, not that long into the horizon, the Final Four will be right here in Portland. And I'm sure people will be bellyaching and complaining. But I actually had a media member who is a national media member. And I said to them, I texted with them and said, hey, have you ever been to Portland? Because, you know, while you may be able to Google Portland and note that, you know, the exact city population, somewhere between 600,000 to 700,000 people, like in the city limits of Portland, but the greater metropolitan area, more than 2 million in the suburbs and beyond, I think you have to have that context to grasp it. I don't think you can quite count Portland, Oregon in the same breath as Albany, New York, population 300,000. But I get why the NCAA tournament did this. And I talked with NCAA tournament members of the executive committee who reviewed the bids and saw the cities. And I said, what things mattered when it came down to Portland as a potential regional site or Final Four site? And among the things that mattered were that, you know, the market has largely supported women's college basketball. It has been a hotbed between Oregon and Oregon State, University of Portland, Portland State. Women's basketball is well supported in the Portland metropolitan area and in the state of Oregon. Beyond that, the regional event in 2019 was a huge success. with fans from all over the Pacific Northwest and fans of those other teams coming to Portland, buying tickets, breaking an attendance record. And that got the attention of the NCAA executive committee that decided, hey, Portland should be a regional site in 2024, as they went to this model with two regional sites. Now, nobody could have predicted that, you know, 7 or 10 years ago, as these sites are being announced and being decided upon, nobody could have predicted that Caitlin Clark would be Caitlin Clark. Nobody could have predicted that South Carolina and LSU would be that kind of thing. Nobody could have probably foretold that ratings in the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament on the women's side would be what they have been. Nobody could have seen potentially Juju Watkins on the scene at USC. I don't think anybody could have predicted also that you've got a Stanford team, a Gonzaga team, a UConn team. You've got enough teams, frankly, that have star power to go to four regions if you're the women's tournament. But they're stuck sitting here at two because that's what they decided when they said, hey, we have an attendance problem with women's college basketball. Now, Nicole Arbach of The Athletic tweeted out and said, you know, that these sites were, decided before the women's game grew so much and that the event has outgrown these cities. I disagree with that. I think that's kind of a lazy take to you know, lazy hill to climb upon and say, hey, you know, this thing's outgrown these two markets. No, I do think that if I'm the NCAA tournament, you know, I'm considering whether this is just an uptick with Caitlin Clark, LSU, South Carolina, all the Pac-12 teams that have been good, Juju Watkins. Is this just an uptick, or is this a bona fide growth moment where you say, hey, the ceiling for this event has grown to the point where two regional sites don't work? I'll be very curious to see tonight at Moda Center with games beginning at 4:30, two games today, two more tomorrow, one each coming up on Sunday and Monday, as this breaks down to four, to an Elite Eight, to the two that get to leave to go off to the Final Four. So it goes 16-8, 4-2. As that happens over the next 4 days, I will be very curious to see what the attendance numbers are. I will also be curious, being somebody who is going to be inside the building, I'll be curious to see what the energy feels like. Now, I went over to Moda Center yesterday, and I walked around, and I got to tell you, there was already kind of a feel around the event that was positive. And it made me insanely proud to be somebody who's in the Pacific Northwest to see this great tournament that has all of this attention and enthusiasm that's on it right now, to see it sort of pop a little bit, and by goodness, you've got the ability to participate in it if you're Portland. So our city, our region, participating in something that is good. Now, I don't know about you, but in the last 7 or 10 years, I have watched small plans get made, and I have watched a lack of follow through from city leaders, and I have watched lawlessness and bad PR and a blend of a lack of leadership and frankly, some hysteria on social media and with some of the news outlets that cover things. You know, my phone was ringing and my mom was going, hey, I see Portland's on fire. Is everything okay? It's much in the same way, I think, that a lot of you have taken those calls and had questions from people over the years. Now, has the tide turned? It looked that way around Moda Center yesterday. I'll be honest, I didn't see burned out vehicles. I didn't see a Winnebago with no wheels on it parked on the side of the road outside Moda Center. I didn't see a bunch of tarps and tents. I saw that the city looked like it had, you know, dressed itself up for what is a big event. And so I'll be interested to see, will we follow through as a sports market? Will you show up? Will you buy tickets on the secondary market on Ticketmaster and StubHub? There's still some tickets available. And will it be a big show that leaves the teams, that leaves Stanford and Gonzaga and Texas and USC saying, hey, you know what? That's a great place to hold a regional. I'll be really curious because I can't speak for those other teams. I can't speak for those entities, but I can tell you, I saw people on social media today, educated people, legitimate media members saying, Portland's so hard to get to. And I'm like, from where? Like, I pretty much can go direct anywhere I want from Portland's airport. So are we really talking about Portland, or are we talking about lumping Portland into the same conversation with Albany, New York? That is trickier. It is a trickier place to get. But I heard from people today who said this event should be held in major cities. It should be held in bigger markets. It should be held in bigger venues. And I'm left kind of slapping my forehead going, do they not understand that the women's NCAA tournament was offered the opportunity to kind of blend itself with the men's Final Four a couple of years ago? There was discussions about should the women's and men's Final Fours be held in the same city, in the same football stadium? Could we take it to Glendale, Arizona this year instead of Cleveland in an NBA arena? But could you take it into a football stadium, an NFL stadium, and sell enough tickets to make it look legit? Or is it a potential risk? And the decision was made several years ago to not combine these events. And I heard people on the women's basketball side who legitimately said, you know what, we don't want to be the junior varsity game in that Final Four round. We want the game to, you know, the game should stand on its own. And you got Lindsey Gottlieb, the USC coach today, who said, you know, women's college basketball, you know, she was asked, has it arrived? And she said, no, it hasn't. It's not that it's arrived. It got here a while ago. It's just that the rest of the country is tuned into it. Now, we could debate that, because I think a few years ago, Sabrina Ionescu had the profile that Caitlin Clark has now probably eclipsed nationally with the notoriety. I actually think Sabrina was probably a better all-around player than Caitlin Clark is. I think Sabrina had more around her and shared the ball more with a couple of WNBA All-Stars that were on her own team at the University of Oregon. But so I agree a little bit that this isn't like a sudden thing. It's like suddenly the game's good. It's progressively got better and better, more entertaining, more interesting. And now you have LSU, South Carolina, Caitlin Clark. You have Juju Watkins in USC. You have a great Oregon State story. I haven't even talked about Oregon State's tremendous victory today in Albany. Oregon State is going to the Elite Eight. We're going to visit with Ron Callen, who is the radio voice of Oregon State women's basketball. He's been around this team all season long. The Beavers are in the Elite Eight. They will play the winner of South Carolina and Indiana, and they will play that game coming up on Sunday for a right to go to the Final Four. And, you know, I'm looking at all these great stories that are happening in the women's game, and I'm going, this is awesome, but I'm still not quite sure, and I'm not quite ready to declare that, you know, if you had four regional sites for women's college basketball, yes, this year it would work, because you could take Caitlin Clark and put her in one region and sell every ticket. You could take LSU and South Carolina and stick them in another region and sell every ticket. You could probably take Stanford and Gonzaga and put them right here in Portland and sell every ticket, and then you take Juju Watkins and whoever else and put them down, you know, in Southern California or in Arizona or something, and, you know, you'd probably sell every ticket. And it would work this year, but I'm not convinced that it works long-term every year. And I'll be really curious to see what happens with women's college basketball beyond this cycle of players. Because what we've seen with the NBA All-Star Game is that it has grown in its magnitude to the point where Portland now is no longer an option for the NBA All-Star Game. We don't have the hotels. We don't have the direct flights. The NBA has made that clear. They're going to bigger cities and bigger venues, and they want to sell more tickets, and they want to make it a festival. Hell, they should just hold it in Vegas every year. So the NBA All-Star Game is off the map for us in this market. Also off the map is the men's Final Four. We don't have an NFL stadium. We can't hold a game and sell 55,000 plus tickets to go see a basketball game. And you can do that in Indianapolis at Lucas Oil Field. You can do that at Glendale in the giant toaster in the middle of the desert. You can do that thing with the men's tournament. And maybe this success of women's college basketball is going to make the NCAA think about future Final Four spots. But for now, it kind of feels like as good as it gets, if I'm using air quotes there, is a women's Final Four for Portland. And in 2030, Portland's going to get it. And, you know, we have seen recent bids go to Columbus and to Tampa and to Portland. And certainly, I think as you look around the country, you know, you can say, hey, Chicago and Miami and other places are large markets. It's also going to Dallas. There are some large markets, but some of those big markets are not bidding on a women's Final Four. I wonder how that will change. I wonder how it will evolve. But I'm here to say, like, I'm not going to let national media members who haven't even been to Portland, Oregon, or maybe have been here, once on a vacation with their wife where they went hiking, I'm not going to let them bag on Portland as a sports market and say, hey, that place is too hard to get to. I'm like, from where? And I'm not going to let them say it's too small of a market. It isn't when it comes to women's college basketball. And it might be one of the most rabid markets in America when it comes to women's college basketball. You probably could take the eastern part of the United States right around UConn. You can take maybe Tennessee fans. And then after that, I would say, you know, what we've seen in Big Ten country this year with Iowa and Caitlin Clark is certainly impressive. But I think long term, if we're really talking about the impact of women's college basketball and the impact of the great play and the exposure that the players are getting, I think the Portland market is probably the next best and biggest market that is interested in women's college basketball, regardless of who's playing. And we're going to see that. And I don't think it's accidental that the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee took Caitlin Clark and sent her to Albany. I don't think that's accidental. I think they knew exactly what they were doing. I don't think it's accidental as well that Juju Watkins was put on the opposite end of the bracket and is in Portland. I think that is completely strategic to separate those players and say, okay, we're going to have one in one region, one in another. They are the two most interesting and dynamic players in women's college basketball. They are far more recognizable than the men's players, at least prior to the event. And I think it's interesting to see that they've been placed where they've been placed. And I also think that, you know, some people have said, hey, why wouldn't, like, what a disservice to Oregon State that they got sent to Albany. Well, part of that, the largest part of that, is due to the fact that Oregon State, which was picked 10th in the Pac-12, ended up being like the third or fourth best team by the time the conference tournament came around. And so you have, you know, USC and Stanford seated in front of the Beavers, and you can't put the Beavers in the Western bracket because they'd have to play those teams, and the selection committee does not want to match up teams from the same conference in the early rounds of the tournament. They don't want that to happen until a Final Four, ideally, or a regional final, worst-case scenario. And so, you know, the Pac-12 having five teams in the Sweet 16 caused some problems there. But I don't think Scott Ruick and Oregon State minded one bit today. Reagan Beers was fantastic. They just fed her. She was dominant. I thought, you know, you look at Talia von Olhoffen, just a gamer, you know, and you look at Tamia Gardner, might be the best player in Oregon State that nobody talks about. She is sort of the spirit and the heart of that team and came up big with so many big shots against Notre Dame today. And yet, what was the narrative? Nationally, people were saying, oh, Notre Dame didn't play well. Notre Dame didn't shoot well. Oh, Notre Dame didn't get their typical performances. And to that note, I would say Notre Dame didn't play in the Pac-12. They got their taste of the Pac-12 today, and Oregon State danced on into the Elite Eight. We're going to go to Albany coming up here in just a moment. Ron Callen, he has been with this team all season long. He says he's going to be possibly on the bus with the Oregon State team. So we'll get some flavor from the road. What was it like in the winning locker room? How focused are they? Are they happy just being in the Elite Eight, or does it need to be bigger for Oregon State and Oregon State women's basketball? All of that still ahead on this one-hour edition of the Bald-Faced Truth. We'll be leading you right into the NCAA tournament action right here on 750 The Game.
And the Oregon State Beavers, 1 year removed from 13 wins total, not only back in the dance, but they're dancing all the way to the Elite Eight.
Oregon State dancing into the Elite Eight. It's March Madness. Our next guest is with the team in Albany, New York. Ron Callen, we've had him on before. Beaver Sports Network, women's college basketball. He's been all around this team all season long. Set the scene, Ron. Where are you right now?
Right now, I am outside the team room. The players are walking by. Say hi, Sheila.
Hi, Beaver Nation.
Sheila Heidi is walking by right now. All the players, we just got back from the arena. They watched South Carolina and Indiana for a while, and Indiana seems to be in big trouble. But this has been a fantastic year, guys. And to win this game today when the other team took 25 more shots and the Beavers had 26 turnovers to 9, but then the rebounding difference was amazing and the Beavs shot like 60%+ to the 30s. And hey, 27-7, and you got 40 minutes away from the Final Four. I think that's for a team that was picked to finish 10th by the Pac-12. You got to say they're pretty darn good.
Talia von Ohlhofen tweeted out that media poll from the beginning of the season just a few minutes ago. How much are they rallying around that, Ron, that they were picked 10th and nobody saw them coming?
You know, I think that's been the moniker all season long, the fact that, hey, nobody respects us, they're dogging us. I mean, even I heard Talia in the postgame talking to another reporter about that and about, you know, at the selection party, I said, well, how far can you go? And she says, all the way. She's a true believer. She's the leader of this team. Last night in the hotel lobby, we were going to dinner, and she and her family brought each of us a lei that they'd flown in from Maui. So we all went out to dinner wearing a lei because, you know, her family's from Maui. And family is so important to her, Ohana, as she likes to call it. And I'll tell you what, she's an amazing leader. The Beavs have players that have grown so much this season. I mean, look at Tamia Gardner. I mean, she is an amazing athlete and a quick release and hit the key three. But her big growth this year hasn't been shooting. We've known she could shoot. It's the ability to box out and get those rebounds at critical times. I mean, she was huge today. And then there's always a game when somebody steps up, and when they were down, Lily Hansford hits that huge three right in front of the Beaver bench, you know, with like about 2 minutes to go. So it's fun to watch them continue to grow. The ultimate test looks like it's going to be on Sunday to get to the Final Four, because you're playing a team that will be 35-0. You know, undefeated in South Carolina, and everybody presumes they're going to win. But I know a lot of the media, in fact, we had some people calling us saying ESPN didn't even want to talk about Oregon State after the game. All they wanted to talk about was the Irish. And, of course, I didn't hear their broadcast. But, hey, you know, they're proving that the Pac-12 is pretty good. 5 of 16. How many will be in the Final Four? We'll have to wait and see. But it is a pleasure to broadcast these games and watch our good team become great.
Ron Callen with us from Albany, New York, at the regional there. Oregon State moving on to the Elite Eight. This team, it's got just a special feel about it. Scott Ruick said it midseason. He came on my show, Ron, and he said he felt like it had the same vibe as the Final Four team. And that was really before they started to move up in the rankings and end up as a top 12 or a top 10 team at different points. Donovan Hunter, you mentioned Tamia Gardner, Talia von Ohlhofen and Reagan Beers. There's some depth here, and then there's some players that have been contributing more recently that, you know, maybe weren't doing that at the beginning of the season. Are they playing? I hate to say it today because they turn the ball over frequently, but are they playing better basketball now than maybe they did midseason, or what do you see?
You know, I think the first step up took place when they got into Pac-12 play, because they knew it was going to be an 18-game gauntlet against ranked teams. And I think the key moment of the season was when they swept Colorado and Utah at home. And then 2 weeks later, they go to their schools in Salt Lake City and Boulder and sweep them there. So you say this team is doing something special. It's continued. Yeah, Reagan got hurt in that amazing 79-77 UCLA win when Talia hit the bomb with 1.1 seconds to go. But, John, you saw this team at the Pac-12 tournament. You saw what they did in their first game, that double overtime comeback win over Colorado to beat them for the third time in a row. That's so tough to do. And it's about, I mean, when you talk to Talia, and I did an interview with her about 30 minutes ago before I got on the team bus, it's just all about heart. It's heart. It's caring for each other, and of course, and to get great scouting by the coaches, you got to give the coaches credit. I mean, look what they did to the guards for Notre Dame today, Hidalgo. They totally frustrated her, just like they held Juju Watkins, who's one heck of a player, to 6 for 33 in the second time they met them. So it's a lot of fun. Albany, New York. I never thought I'd be here this long, but you know, it's great, and look forward to Sunday, and that's going to be a game with high interest. And let's see how many Pac-12 teams make it to the Final Four. You got a prediction, John?
I had said all along I wouldn't be surprised to see 3 in the Elite Eight and 2 in the Final Four, but I may have to expand that, you know, prediction, because I didn't see five in the Sweet 16. I thought they could get four. This conference looks good. And maybe, like, you know, it was said on the broadcast, and you're right about the post game on ESPN. It was all about Notre Dame not playing well and nose rings and all of this stuff that had nothing to do with Oregon State. But Oregon State just, in the moment of truth, found a way, and this team seems to find that. And who do you put that on, and what is that about? And, you know, that belief or that ability to kind of rise to meet the moment.
I put it on three players. I put it on Tamia Gardner, Talia Von Ohlhofen, and Donovan Hunter. Okay, Donovan Hunter's numbers were good today. She had a couple of big shots, but she faced Hidalgo. She frustrated Hidalgo. She's a freshman who was playing for Medford, you know, less than a year ago, right? I mean, and she is just an amazingly mature, smart, and nothing fazes her. She is never bothered. And I think that's one of the keys. You need a point guard who's not going to get flustered. Yeah, there were turnovers today, but they've had a lot of turnover games between 15 and 20 and won each time. That's because they do play shutdown defense, even when there's a turnover. I mean, today the Irish had a couple of good opportunities after turnovers. They couldn't take advantage of it because the Beavs got back and made them uncomfortable on the offensive end.
Give us an idea of the atmosphere in the Albany Regional. There were some national media members saying, oh, that is a terrible place to hold a regional. They were even, Ron, they were saying Portland's a bad place to hold a regional. They'd never been there, though. Give us an idea of what the atmosphere was like.
You know, we were here 5 years ago, and I didn't think much of it. They've done a much better job this time. They've revamped the floor. The stadium, which holds 15,000, sold out. And you know why it sold out? Because South Carolina and Iowa and LSU, right? I mean, that's one big reason that they're all here. So it's a sellout. It was a good atmosphere today. And behind me, guys, I would say about 250 Beaver fans that made the trek all the way from the West Coast to Albany. A lot of them were family members, but a lot who were just diehard, longtime Oregon State women's basketball fans who started following this team back when they started to get into postseason play when Scott Ruick joined in 2010. In fact, Allie Gibson, who was on the first Pac-12 championship team, was my halftime guest today. And, you know, she's still playing. She's going to play for Puerto Rico in the Olympics this summer in France. So she came on at halftime. But the bottom line is, man, this team has an incredible fan base. They followed them out here. And, I mean, yeah, Albany, New York is not a, you know, it's not a bucket list place. But as far as basketball, the Beavers just did what they did anywhere they play. You know, they play unselfish basketball. I mean, the game, when they beat Nebraska the other day, guys, 21 assists on 22 baskets. How often do you see that? Not very often. I mean, that's an amazing stat.
Ron Callen with us, Beaver Sports Network. He's been there all season with the women's basketball program. He's in Albany, New York. After the game, you got Scott Ruick with a big high five with Aaliyah Goodman, a former player at Oregon State, now one of his assistants. There is a lot of culture and a lot of culture keepers inside the program. Yeah. You've been around it. Even in Scott Ruick's early years where he wasn't getting success, they were not good in their first few seasons. And, you know, he inherited a mess. We all know that. But, you know, I had another SID at Arizona State. Doug Tamro reached out to me and he said, 15-39 in their first three seasons. No one panicked. That doesn't happen anymore in athletics. The journey of Scott Ruick, the culture, Aaliyah Goodman now on the bench as an assistant, what does that mean to this program?
You know, you talk about, it's all about that family thing that Talia was even talking about. I mean, Aaliyah Goodman, you know, she was a tremendous player. In fact, her final 2 years, she had to deal with the COVID mess, but she continued to play hard. She leaves and goes to Duke for two seasons and kind of, you know, gets her feet on the ground as an assistant coach and learning how to analyze things. But she wanted to come home. Her family, you know, she went to LaSalle High School in Milwaukee, and she wanted to come back. And I'll tell you what, she and Devin Hunter, the two assistants, former players under Scott, they both know what Scott wants, what he needs, and they both been very successful. And I'll tell you what, when Aaliyah Goodman, and you've interviewed thousands of people on the radio, when I do the Scatter Report on my pregame show, she sounds like a head coach, John. She's going to be a head coach someday somewhere. I mean, she's so articulate. And they all have a passion for this program, though. And I think Scott was smart to bring in former players because they're not that much older than some of the players who are on the roster, right? Even though there's no seniors. That was another amazing thing. Two graduate students and four seniors on Notre Dame. The Bees with no seniors. You know, I mean, it's just all these little stats you go, wow. Yeah, but nothing phases this team. I mean, they're not going to be intimidated by South Carolina, but South Carolina is the best team in the country. So that's going to be a tall order on Sunday, but I can't wait to see how they attack it.
Yeah, let's talk about that because, you know, the way I see it, Ron, Oregon State has to play their best game. It, you know, it may be their A game, A-plus game that they have to play. They're going to have to shoot it. They're going to they cannot afford to have the turnover problems they had today against Notre Dame. But what else? What are you thinking about as you think about that matchup?
Well, I think you nailed most of it. You know, I think, you know, turnovers, you can't go over 15, period. It'd be better if you had 10 to 12. And then the shooting percentage, if they shoot like they did today, that will be encouraging. The big issue, okay, the Beavs are big inside. They've got Reagan and they've got Tamia and, you know, guards like Talia Von Ohlhofen and Donovan Hunter can get boards. But, you know, Cardasso on South Carolina, pardon me, is an amazing player, and they've got a whole load of incredible athletes with South Carolina. So it's going to be, like you say, play their best game, cut down on the turnovers, but make your shots. Make sure players like Lily Hansford and Abby Blacklock, like Blacklock came in today, didn't try a three, but she had a great shot off the glass, you know, of an important bucket at the time she was in. That the bench is deep. There's 12 players. They've all made contributions. I mean, Notre Dame, I think, got tired, too, at the end a little bit. I mean, when you're playing 6 and 7 at the most against a team that played, 10, I think, today, I mean, it's really interesting to see the dichotomy there. But South Carolina, these will be underdogs. Indiana was 15.5-point underdogs today to them. I haven't seen the score since halftime when I think they were up 17. But everybody expects them to win. But that's what most of the media types, the East Coast bias media types, and that's just a fact. You know, I mean, they don't watch Oregon State basketball. You know, they remember, oh, yeah, they were good a few years ago, but Scott is an amazing coach. I mean, I went to Linfield, so I know D3 world. And, you know, he came out of the D3 world at George Fox and Newberg. And, you know, I mean, LaVonda Wagner left. And he was, you know, Bob DiCarlo said, hey, come on in. Let's see what you can do. And here he is. It's 14 years now. And he's shown that, he was coach of the year, right, with Pac-12 media. I don't think it was the coaches. But he's respected by everybody. And I can't wait to see what Tar Vanderveer and Stanford do in a little while tonight.
Yeah, right here in Portland. Ron Callen with us from Albany, New York at the Albany Regional, where Oregon State has advanced to the Elite Eight. The score on that South Carolina-Indiana game has tightened up. It is a 10-point game headed to the fourth quarter. So 65-55, South Carolina headed to the fourth. We'll see how they go. South Carolina, obviously, 34-0. It will be a tall test for Oregon State. Ron, what will the team do between now and tomorrow's practice and then obviously a game on Sunday? What will the team do?
The coaches, I know we're stayed and watched the second game. I think what will happen is tomorrow they'll head back over to Siena College, which is the host school for this this regional, and practice. And it'll be a long practice, I bet. And they'll watch a lot of tape. And I think the key could be making threes too, John. If they can make threes, and they have all these different players that can do it. And that's going to be one thing. They're going to have to make their three-pointers. But the practice will take place. They'll have a good family, you know, get together with some. A lot of the parents are here, so they'll probably be hanging out with them tonight. And then tomorrow, as Lily Hansford told me, just get to work. That's what we've been doing all season long. We do not dwell on our wins. What's next? What do we have to do? And I've seen a lot of Beaver teams under Scott Ruick. This team, John, might be the most attentive at practice. And players like Talia and Tamia, hey, they'll say, hey, what about this, coach? And he listens, and they're like, okay, let's give it a try. So, you know, Scott, he is just a tactician, maybe like no other. He knows how to create an uncomfortable situation for the opponent. And the best player on that team, Hidalgo, was uncomfortable today. And when you put it right down to brass tacks, that probably was why the Beavers won today.
Had so much being made of the nose ring. She, for people who didn't watch the game, she had a nose ring in. The NCAA says you can't wear one. The officials sent her to the bench and made her remove it. She did not look happy about that. I don't think she would have been happy with the ring in. She wasn't playing that well anyway. this Oregon State team gets dissed, Ron, at every corner. ESPN talking about Notre Dame. The media picking them 10th. They you know, as you said, they rally around it. How far can they carry this thing? I mean, and you tell me, Ron, is the whole Pac-12 implosion in the background of all of this, is that something they can use to rally around as well?
You know, I think they have used it, the fact that the Pac-12 debacle, whatever you want to call it, because, I mean, is it coming back someday? Is there going to be buyer's remorse in places like Eugene and Palo Alto when they get tired? I mean, we flew out here to Albany, okay, on a charter, and it took almost 6 hours. So that means 6 hours back. How many times do you want to do 12-hour trips every other weekend? I just think that's, I don't know, I think it's short-sighted. We know all the reasons. We've talked about it for almost a year about the whys they're doing it. And with football, it's not as bad a deal, but these other sports guys have to travel so much, three time zones every other weekend. And this one trip, I tell you, the players, you know, it's a long trip. So let's see. But, you know, if you're Oregon, you're playing Rutgers and Maryland one weekend, then 2 weeks later you're going to Penn State and Ohio State or something like that. I mean, I think it'll get old fast. I think it's going to be interesting to see, you know, because the volatility in college athletics is at an all-time high. And so we'll wait and see. But and then the Beavers next year, you know, what are they going to do to maintain the RPI? In November and December, you're not going to be playing Arkansas Pine Bluff and Morgan State very often. You're going to be playing teams. You got to play it. And this team, though, next year will be the first time there'll be a couple of seniors. I mean, I think they could be listed as, especially with the win today, a top 10 team, or maybe even higher in the first poll for the 2024-25 season, even though they will be in the Pac-2 and the WCC. That's how good this team can be.
Ron Callen with us, Beaver Sports Network. But Ron, you've been there all year. You've interviewed these players. You've been around them. I've watched your videos. I think you're doing a hell of a job covering this team like nobody else. How much fun are you having kind of watching this run and watching this team blossom?
You know, it's been a blast because, you know, I'm not working at a radio station in Portland anymore, so I don't have to worry about getting up at 4 a.m. for the 5 to 9 shift, you know, or putting in reports every day. But I've been able to focus on putting stuff together for them. And I have a podcast and all that, too. But, you know, these players, this team, it is impressive. I'm impressed with every player on this team. And, I mean, they all play different roles, and they've accepted them. I mean, look at Sela Heidi. You know, her parents went to Oregon State. Her brother played for San Diego State last night. How often have two siblings been in the Sweet 16 at the same time? I tried to look it up. I couldn't find the answer. I'm sure there's some obscure almanac somewhere that has the answer to that. But, you know, she plays a role, and she's had some tremendous moments in the season. And she got jacked up the most when they had to play Cal because she spent 3 years there. And, of course, the Beavs took care of business against them twice. So that made her happy. But, she knows she's backing up Reagan. Nobody's going to stop Reagan from being the starter and playing. But she is a dynamic you need. Somebody to come in, you know, and get some rebounds. And she's really adept at putting up a little putback shot. So that's just one player that you don't hear about a lot. But she's tremendous. And then you've got AJ, who broke down crying after the game today. Just how emotional, she said, we've come so far, and to do this today was just a huge moment in my life. And so she didn't have big numbers today, but she was out there playing hard. And so, hey, they'll be ready to go Sunday. It's going to be fun. And I didn't see an official time yet. I heard it may be 11 o'clock or 11:15. That's to be determined. But, not a lot of time to get ready. So, you know, tomorrow's going to be a busy work day for the Beavs.
Will be fun to watch this. Enjoying it, Ron. I appreciate you joining us. Great job. Make sure you hydrate. You got a big weekend ahead.
Hey, no doubt about that. Hey, John, thank you for having me. You and Judah, appreciate the time, and we'll talk again soon.
All right, there he goes. Ron Callen You've seen him and heard him all season long on Oregon State women's basketball. He's there on the scene. Love the scene setter. Of course, Oregon State now sitting and waiting. Probably South Carolina on Sunday. Leave it here. Beautiful day for basketball. Nobody's ever said that, have they? Like, normally they say that for baseball or football or soccer or... But it is a beautiful day in the Portland metropolitan area, and I hope the television cameras, when they show the Portland regional games of the women's NCAA tournament, show the lines outside Moda Center. I've got a couple of photographers who were on duty all weekend, credentialed at Moda Center, Serena Moronis and Najee Soccer and Tim Healy, three photographers, in fact, that will be there all weekend and through Monday's games. And Serena sent me a photograph and a video of the scene outside Moda Center where there is a huge line of people that were lined up to get into the venue just about 20 minutes ago. And they have now opened the doors and they are, you know, moving into the building. But it is a significant scene for a building that would otherwise be empty on this day to see so many people, so many basketball fans. And I'm trying to figure out, are they fans of Gonzaga? Are they fans of, you know, and I'll tell you what I see. I see Stanford shirts. I see some Texas shirts. I see some Gonzaga shirts. And I see a whole bunch of people who are just going to the games because it looks like they're just here to see some basketball. So it'll be fun to track that and talk about that. Of course, we'll have all that on Monday's show. We'll be leading you right into March Madness on this broadcast. In Portland on 750 The Game, we will go right into the broadcast of March Madness in the NCAA tournament. And it'll be a lot of fun over this weekend as we get down to four teams in the men's bracket and four teams in the women's bracket. A couple of things I just want to hit on before the end of this hour. I'm just going to move quickly here. We've got everybody salivating suddenly over Michael Penix Jr. at the, you know, pro days and workouts, and he's running, and everybody's like, we didn't know he was that fast. He ran a 4.46 in the 40. Michael Penix Jr. at Washington's pro day. A lot of people said they wouldn't be surprised if he ran faster than 4.05, and he did that. Here's Penix.
Yeah, they're going to get a guy that's going to help lift the team up, you know, help elevate everybody around him. You know, that's why I feel like I've been able to do it two different places, and I've been super blessed to be able to have great players around me, you know, to help up my game, you know, continue to allow me to become better day in and day out. So I'm just super blessed, and they're going to get a winner.
I just love how now all the talking heads are saying, well, now he's a sure thing to be a first-round pick. Never mind the fact that the guy did it on the field and that scouts saw it on the field. Now that he has run a 40 time that makes him look like an athlete, suddenly now everybody's saying, well, now he's, you know, now he's draftable in the first round. Sure draft, sure first-round pick now. Look, Penix Jr.'s film and the film on him, the tape on him, speaks volumes, probably more so than any other quarterback that is being talked about being picked in the first round. Like maybe Caleb Williams is in that conversation because they both have just a ton of starts, a ton of reps, a whole bunch of success. I would argue that Penix Jr.'s long ball and his ability to be accurate with the long passes are what's going to make him most attractive to NFL teams. Also, his size, his arm strength, he's got it all. And, you know, the knock on him is, oh, he's not mobile. Well, he didn't have to run in Ryan Grubb's offense. He found ways to get the ball to Roma Dunze and everybody else, and Washington ends up in the national championship game. So, I don't have questions about Michael Penix. I think actually the better thing for him would be to be drafted in the second half of the first round, somehow slip into the second half of the first round and get drafted by a team that has some pieces around him. Also moving on, Draymond Green got ejected 4 minutes into the game last night. Some body language issues on the Warriors bench. Steph Curry didn't look happy with Draymond. Steve Kerr didn't sound happy with Draymond. Draymond talking about his ejection.
I got ejected 4 minutes into the game. Just can't do it. Regardless of what was said, I'm not about to get into what was said because that's irrelevant. To Steph's point, I have to be on the floor. And whatever that means, you just have to do that. I look at this, I'm not overreacting to this because of everything that happened in the beginning of the season. You know, I feel like since I've returned, everything's headed in the right direction and hit a little bump in the road, get over it and keep going. I said what I said. I deserved to get kicked out at that point. If I'm all the way honest with y'all, I kind of was trying to turn my body and angle and go to the bench. And I said what I said, like a little too soon before angling my body to the bench. But yeah, it just can't happen. Like we need to win games.
I can't stand that he's quibbling over, like he's trying to blame his lack of self-control on, you know, it was my body angle. If I waited just a second more, I would have been fine. This is a guy who's got 21 career ejections. He is closing in on Rasheed Wallace's all-time NBA record of 29 ejections. And the body language with Steph Curry and the body language with Steve Kerr told me everything I need to know about how they're feeling about Draymond Green. They aren't viewing this as a speed bump. They're not viewing this as a setback. They're viewing this as same old Draymond. He's a problem. We can't count on him. This is a guy who's in crisis, and if he doesn't figure it out, I'm not just worried about the Warriors season. I'm thinking this might be the beginning of the end of Draymond Green. All right, we're back next week with great shows. I want everybody to have a great Easter weekend. Oregon State, can they get it done? We'll find out on Sunday. The bald-faced truth is out. Hey, it's John Canzano for the Shoemill Shoe Stores, Portland to Salem, and online at shoemill.com. Shoemill's got a great family story. They have taken one store 3 generations ago and built it into a shoe empire from Portland to Salem. And online, obviously, they put the world at your feet. They go around the world. They find the best shoes. They have great customer service. They're my go-to. And I think about them every time I put on a pair of shoes, because more often than not, they're from Shoemill. Shoemill, we put the world at your feet.